13 Days of Halloween is a production of iHeartRadio, Blumhouse Television, and Grim and Mild from Aaron Mankey. Headphones recommended. Listener discretion advised.
Hear anything of interest? Oh, no. No judgment. I've given you a taste of the mysteries here. It's only natural that you should seek out your own little thrill now and then. Today, I will show you something truly beautiful. Follow. This is one of the most awe-inspiring spaces at Hawthorne Manor. And also, in a sense, the most storied. Ah! Here we are. Behold, the solarium. It really must be seen to be believed, no? I imagine even now, you're thinking, praise the heavens that this has been placed before my eyes. Just magnificent. Several hundred panes of intricately stained glass, telling the long history of Hawthorne Manor. From inception all the way to the beginning of my time as caretaker many, many years later. Seen here, the architect standing under a deep blue sky at the site for the first time. Each star in that sky above him, a precious gemstone, mined from the four corners of the earth. And here, tragically, the death of his daughter, who slipped from the cupola atop the manor house. Some have said that she was merely climbing out to be nearer to the stars, but we'll never know for certain what caused the fall. You'll notice the strikingly realistic colors in each of these. The greens of summer and oranges of autumn, distilled into their very essence. For instance, here, the red of his daughter's blood. Normally a mixture of gold chloride would be used, but the hue was not quite right. So the architect instructed the artisan to search ever further for new minerals. When these efforts failed, the architect himself began delving into mines and pulling out varying shades of ore. It is said to have taken him 20 years to find a shade suitable for his daughter's depiction. And by then, his hands were twisted and gnarled. The architect always got what he wanted. Well, mostly.
Who's there?
Ah, Hester, of course. Well, it was only a matter of time before we came upon our housekeeper. Hester, this is my friend. I'm sure you've been aware of his presence. I suppose you two may as well speak. I shall return. Oh, Hester, tread lightly.
I do the windows every day around this time. Quite a job, but they're breathtaking, aren't they? The architect and all of his secrets. It's all up there. But heaven forbid you see the arteries. The little specks of stardust that make a living organism like this function. Nobody really thinks to look for the housekeepers. You scream at us to leave you alone when we drop by for turndown service in the mornings, and then as far as you're concerned, we simply cease to exist. That's fine. I prefer to be forgotten. That's when I get to eat. Silent and out of sight, feeding on whatever you have to offer. I've had you in my sight since you first walked through that threshold into the caretaker's waiting arms, you know. Oh, but the things you'd like to know about the caretaker. He's got secrets you wouldn't believe. His secrets taste like thunderstorms and battery acid, but savory, and always leaves me wanting more. Those secrets bring me back to my days before the affliction took hold. Do you know much about that? Afflictions? That's one type of secret people often keep. their ailments. Nutritionally speaking, afflictions are pretty good. Not like murders or affairs. Those kinds of secrets are off the charts. But afflictions aren't bad. They have a peculiar flavor to them. But they go down smooth. You do smell good. Bergamot, tanned leather, freshly tilled dirt. Your secret is a certain delicacy, isn't it? You're wondering what I'm talking about. The flavor of your secret. It's a gift, though I didn't think of it that way at first. It struck me rather suddenly, the affliction. I was fine. Healthy as you please. No secrets to be had. Idyllic. And then one day, I did something terrible. Morally abhorrent. And once I'd done it, I wasn't idyllic anymore. The smell was the first thing I noticed. A lingering air of paperback musk and overripe plums. Nausea was the second thing. Like a gnawing hunger deep within my gut. And so I ate. I ate more and more. I'd have two or three dinners. My friends would bake entire pies and bring them to me as gifts. And I'd eat until I felt fit to burst. But the food was no good. Nothing was satiating. Nothing was nourishing my body. You'd think I'd gain weight, but it was quite the opposite. I used to spill out of my clothes, like fibers couldn't contain me. I was meant to take up space in the world, to be seen, impossible to ignore. But after my secret buried its spurs into my lower intestine, it wouldn't let real food take hold. Like a parasite, my secret ate and ate and ate. And then, over time, I became far less lovely. I no longer flowed and spilled. My flesh became less buoyant and refused to fill space. Instead of rising and pushing and demanding, it began hanging and sagging and dripping. And there was less of it. Every day, I became gaunt, sallow, eaten. Before long, I could no longer stand. I was bedridden, a husk of what used to be a human girl. Dry and withered like something washed up and left to rot on the shore. When my death became inevitable, they came to visit me. My friends and family. They sat on a little wooden chair next to my old sunken bed. They held my skeletal hand and looked at me through glassy eyes, searching for some sign of my former self in the tiny sliver of a human thing hidden underneath a heaping pile of blankets. And they cried, and they mourned. And one by one, they confessed. Do you know what happens when you are dying? When there's no turning back for you, when there's no hope left to glean? People unload their secrets on you. You become a vessel to carry their mournings into the next world. They tell you their grievances, lighten their own load by freeing themselves of the burden, and sleep easily at night, knowing their secret to be safely kept to the literal grave. You are bestowed with the honor of becoming the master of secrets. The first was my very best friend, Maribel. She confessed her secret to me through thick tears while clutching my hand. sweet, like sugar cane and honeysuckle. At that point, I was so far gone that I was completely immobile. But she leaned in close and sobbed her confession into my ear. And I squeezed her hand. A small gesture, but that was more strength than I had had in quite some time at that point. And then the others came. My brother, after whom I was able to sit upright against my pillows. His was tart and bitter, like the skin of a peach. My father, whose secret was so vile that I could walk clear across the room after learning it, salty and herbaceous, like basil and sweat. After my mother's secret, I gained 12 pounds. Hers was a full homemade Thanksgiving dinner with all the fixins. Their secrets. They sit inside of me, supporting my organs, keeping my blood oxygenated and flowing right. I need them. But, like all good things, this period came to an end. With me no longer knocking on death's door, people stopped divulging. So I had to start seeking my meals out, hunting them. It's a finely honed skill, secret stalking, learning to pick up on their particular vague scents. Cheaters have a cloying sweetness that teeters on something else altogether. Liars are like different varietals of wine. Sadists, acidic to varying degrees. And politicians are fatty. Their secrets melt and coat the insides of your cheeks and leave a film across your teeth. Everyone, and I mean just about everyone, has some sort of secret wafting around them, secreting from their pores. But most won't volunteer it to you. And those that do are rarely harboring anything nutritionally rich. The types of secrets that get volunteered are usually trivial. Not like a really good deceit. Those secrets stink to high heaven. Intoxicating, magnetic smells. And that's how I ended up here. I could smell that caretaker from 2,000 miles away. And I followed his scent. I found this place to be a gold mine. A cornucopia of people weighed down by their burdensome secrets and lies. A 24-hour smorgasbord feast for me and my little ailment. And I've been cleaning windows and feeding off the guests ever since. Do you ever stop to think about the things the housekeepers must know about you? I know everything. From the mundane, the brand of toothpaste you use, and whether you floss your teeth, to the obscure. I see the blood and vomit on bedsheets, and the strange stains that form on the mattresses beneath. But these little hints, I don't get much satiation from them. I need to know your secret intimately in order to be nourished by it. When you leave here, go to any room and take a gander into the people. It should be all fish-eyed and distorted, right? Not here. I've had all of the peoples inverted. By the time I've called housekeeping, I've already been studying them for quite some time. I know what they're up to in there. What they're hiding. I've been tasting their secrets since day one. And look at me now. Plump and healthy, skin deep and dark and absolutely glowing. You look nervous. Well, don't worry, dear. Your secret's safe with me. You didn't think I'd sniff it out? I'm afraid that's not how it works, dear.
I'm far too seasoned of a hunter for that.
I'd spin around, dear. He doesn't much care for me interacting with his guests. Afraid I might spill his beans, I'd imagine.
But why would I do that? They keep me young. You go on now.
Get back to your little hunt. Everything we just talked about. It's our little secret.
Esther, you look like the cat who ate the canary. Well, friend, I suppose the time has come for Hester to get back to work. Come along. I apologize for leaving you in her presence. Of all the denizens of Hawthorne Manor, she is the only one who makes me uneasy. I, of course, know of her little peephole scheme. Think she's the only one who fully observes our guests? But perhaps she divulged something to you which I could never extract. But then, you'd never tell, would you? Fantastic. Well, my friend, time is winding down and I must continue my rounds. Tomorrow, more. Adieu, my dearest friend.
13 Days of Halloween was created by Matt Frederick and Alex Williams and executive produced by Aaron Mankey, starring Keegan-Michael Key as the caretaker. Today's story was written by Zoe Cooper, performed by Brittany Wilkerson, and directed by Matt Frederick, with editing and sound design by Miranda Hawkins. Additional writing and script supervision from Nicholas Dukoski, casting by Jessica Luza. Only 3 days remain. Tomorrow, another story.
I'd heard of colonies acting odd, getting gassy before, but this hurt. I felt my skin crawling, and when I looked down, there was a shape. Shapes, pushing my shirt outward and pulling, puckering down, it felt like to the bone. Snatching the fabric away, I watched the flesh of my belly forming a moving image. Ripples, like smoke.
13 Days of Halloween is a production of iHeartRadio, Blumhouse Television, and Grim and Mild from Aaron Mankey. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. And learn more about 13 Days of Halloween at grimandmild.com.